5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to What If They're Wrong After the Accusation. I'm Amber Hund. Today I'm reporting on something I wasn't sure I'd ever actually say. Hamilton County Prosecutor Connie Pillage announced on Friday, December 12th, that she's dismissing all charges against Elwood Jones. And more than that, she believes he's innocent. Let me say that again. The prosecutor's office is not just dropping charges because they can't prove the case anymore. The prosecutor says that the evidence shows Elwood Jones did not kill Rhoda Nathan. This doesn't happen. Prosecutors don't often admit their office got it wrong, especially not in death penalty cases. They don't stand up and say, "We nearly executed an innocent man." But that's exactly what happened more than three decades after Rhoda Nathan was killed at the Embassy Suites Hotel in Blue Ash, Ohio. Here's Pillage talking at a press conference most reporters learned about barely an hour before it began. An editing note, I've shortened some of her pauses.
Today's a pretty important day. Just moments ago, I dismissed the case against Elwood Jones. This is the result of a months-long intensive review of trial paperwork, of court filings, of evidence. I came to the conclusion that there's a lack of evidence, both physical and forensic, tying Mr. Jones to the murder. Trying this case anew would be futile. We just don't have evidence to prove Mr. Jones was the killer.
It's a coincidence that this occurred literally just a few hours after we released an episode updating you on the latest legal developments in this case. I mean, we had some sense that something would happen soon. We just didn't have any idea that it would be this soon. So we've been scrambling here to bring you the news as quickly as possible. For those just joining us or who need a reminder, Elwood Jones was in his early 40s when he was arrested in 1995 for Rhoda's murder the year before. He was convicted in late 95 and sentenced to death in 1996. He spent nearly 30 years on Ohio's death row before being released on bond in January 2023 after Hamilton County Common Pleas Judge Wendy Cross overturned his conviction and granted him a new trial. Rhoda Nathan was 67 years old, a beloved grandmother from New Jersey who was in town to celebrate her best friend's grandson's bar mitzvah. She was found beaten and barely breathing in her hotel room on September 3, 1994. She died from those injuries. It was a senseless, brutal crime that shocked the region. Everyone at the time rightly said that someone should be held accountable for it. But the Hamilton County prosecutor now says that someone was never Elwood Jones. The road to Friday's announcement has been long and procedurally complex because isn't everything in the justice system? Two recent legal developments essentially paved the way for this outcome, and both happened last month. We talked about these in the episode we had released before This Happened Friday, but I don't know if anyone's going to listen to that episode now, so let's cover our bases. First, in early December, the Ohio Supreme Court issued a ruling that, on its surface, looked like a win for the state. The court ruled 5-2 on a narrow procedural question about whether the First District Court of Appeals had properly denied prosecutors' request to appeal Judge Cross's decision to grant Jones a new trial. When Judge Cross ordered that new trial back in 2022, she did so on two independent grounds. First were Brady violations. That's when prosecutors withhold potentially helpful evidence from the defense. The second ground was what lawyers call Petro violations, newly discovered evidence that wasn't available at the original trial, including expert testimony that undermined the medical evidence the prosecution had relied on. When Hamilton County prosecutors wanted to appeal Judge Cross's decision, they only challenged the Brady violations. They completely ignored the Petro stuff. The First District looked at that and basically said, even if we agreed with you about Brady, Judge Cross also granted the new trial based on these Petro violations you didn't address. So any appeal would be futile. The Supreme Court disagreed with that reasoning and sent the case back to the First District. The state only won on procedure. They successfully argued they should have been allowed to make their appeal, but that didn't change the fact that they never actually addressed the second independent ground for the new trial. So even if they did eventually win on the Brady issue, the new trial order would probably still stand because of the Petro violations. It was a hollow victory, the kind that looks good in a press release but doesn't actually change the outcome. But the real story, the one that made Friday's announcement almost inevitable, came on November 24th, when Jones's defense team filed a motion to dismiss under Ohio Criminal Rule 12K. Now, Rule 12K is one of those procedural tools that doesn't get a lot of attention, but when it applies, it's devastating for prosecutors. The rule essentially says that if the state appeals an issue and loses, they can't use that evidence or witness at trial. It's the court's way of saying, you took your shot, you lost, now you have to live with the consequences. And that's what happened here. Back in August 2022, during the hearing that led to Judge Cross overturning Jones's conviction, the state fought hard to get Officer Michael Bray's testimony from the 1995 trial admitted in any new trial. Bray, who died in 2018, had testified that he found Rhoda Nathan's distinctive gold pendant in Jones's toolbox more than a week after the murder. Bray's discovery has been the subject of scrutiny because, one, he found the pendant while alone, two, other investigators had searched Jones' car before he did, and three, a witness testified that he had actually emptied that toolbox in the days after the murder when he was working on Jones' car, and he said he found no pendant. Yet the pendant was the key physical evidence linking Jones to the crime. Judge Cross ruled that Bray's prior testimony couldn't be used because Jones had not had a fair opportunity to cross-examine him back in 1996. The defense didn't have access to nearly 4,000 pages of investigatory documents that could have been used to challenge Bray's story about finding that pendant. The state appealed that decision, and in August 2025, as I covered in a previous episode in this feed, they lost. The First District Court of Appeals upheld Judge Cross's decision to exclude Bray's testimony. Here's where it gets interesting. When prosecutors appealed that decision, they certified something to the court. When prosecutors want to appeal an order suppressing evidence, they have to certify, quote, that the ruling has substantially impaired the prosecution of the case, end quote. And that's not even the strongest language they used. In previous filings and oral arguments, prosecutors were even more explicit. The state essentially said, without Officer Bray's testimony, we can't introduce the pendant. Without the pendant, our case is destroyed. They certified under oath that, quote, any reasonable possibility of effective prosecution has been destroyed, end quote. That certification mattered. Because when they lost that appeal in August 2025, Rule 12K kicked in. The rule says that when the state loses an appeal on suppressed evidence, they're barred from prosecuting the case if they previously certified that the suppression substantially impaired their ability to prosecute. The defense filed their motion to dismiss on November 24th, arguing exactly this. You certified your case was destroyed without Bray's testimony. You lost your appeal. Rule 12 case says you can't prosecute. It's not a discretionary thing. It's mandatory. Now, when I wrote Friday's initial episode, I suspected it was possible that Connie Pillich and her team might look at this argument and realize the defense has a point. But that's not the reason Pillich cited when she said she's not pursuing a retrial against Elwood. She went much further than the procedural argument. Here she is explaining the medical evidence.
The coroner did a blood test and found that Mrs. Nathan had hepatitis B. Hepatitis B is extremely contagious. Even tiny, tiny pinpricks of a contagious sample could lead to, and would lead to someone contracting the disease. The testimony at trial was that this was a brutal murder, that the decedent was beaten, there was blood, and that Mr. Jones had an injury on his hand, but he had never contracted hepatitis B from it, and that was the new evidence. And that excludes him as a suspect.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This gets complicated, but if you're one of the millions of people who watched the Forensic Files episode about Elwood Jones's case, you might remember that he had an injury on his dominant hand that he sustained the day of Rhoda's murder. His hand was infected, and a hand surgeon testified that the main bacteria in that infection was something called Eichenella choroidans. That hand surgeon in the original trial testified that the only way Elwood Jones could have gotten that infection was from punching Rhoda Nathan in the mouth so hard that her dental plaque implanted into the joint of his hand and caused the infection. Now, an expert that testified in 2022 said that's absolutely not true. He said that Eichenella choroidans can be found anywhere in the body, and that Elwood Jones could have gotten that infection by doing exactly what he said he had done that day, which is cut himself on a set of metal stairs while taking trash out to a dumpster. Elwood said he put his mouth on the infection to lick the wound, and science tells us that it's possible he could have infected himself with Eichenella choroidans in that manner. Now, you might be wondering what this has to do with hepatitis B. Well, the prosecution's theory that Elwood Jones attacked Rhoda and got this infection from her mouth falls apart when you know that hepatitis B is incredibly infectious. In the intervening 30 years since Rhoda's death, he not only has never tested positive for hepatitis B, but he doesn't have any of the antibodies associated with it. He's never had the disease. And the likelihood of him getting hepatitis B from punching Rhoda in the mouth is a lot higher than him getting an Eichenella choroidans infection. So that's what Connie Pillich was referencing during the press conference. And when Amanda Rossman, my producer, and I asked her directly after the press conference whether she personally believes Jones is innocent, here's what she said.
You know, I don't think it matters, but yes, when medical evidence excludes him, that's very persuasive to me. But what's most important is what I think a jury would hear, and if I can prove it. That my job is not what I believe, but what I can prove.
Of course, it does matter what she thinks, or at least what she publicly says she thinks. So I followed up on her comment. You can hear her fiddling with some papers as she readies to answer me.
I've covered a few cases in this arena before. I've never heard a prosecutor say that they thought somebody was innocent. I'm not the type of reporter who usually asks, like, how does that feel? But I am curious, like, what does that feel like to think that the system that you were representing now, but some beyond Death Row, no less, for, yeah, 30 years?
Wow.
It's a momentous decision, momentous event for a lot of people. You know, my heart does go out to the Nathan family who don't get justice. But my job is to be, is to seek justice for everybody involved, not just Mrs. Nathan, but putting away a guy who didn't do it is not justice.
This case highlights several things about how the criminal justice system works and sometimes doesn't work. First, it took 30 years to get here. Elwood Jones was arrested and convicted in 1995. He was sentenced in 1996. He spent the next 26 years on death row, appealing his conviction, and every single appeal failed. It wasn't until pro bono lawyers presented those nearly 4,000 pages of withheld documents, documents that should have been turned over to his defense team in the first place, to Judge Wendy Cross, that the system finally started to correct itself. Second, the fact that Prosecutor Pillage is willing to say Jones is not guilty, not just that the case can't be proven, but that he didn't do it, is extraordinary. Even when charges are dismissed for lack of evidence, prosecutors typically maintain that they still believe the defendant is guilty, they just can't prove it. Third, this case shows the downstream effects of prosecutorial misconduct. Those withheld documents weren't just procedural violations. They were potentially the difference between life and death for Elwood Jones. Without them, his defense couldn't properly challenge Officer Bray's testimony about finding the pendant. Without being able to challenge that testimony, the jury convicted him. Based on that conviction, the state of Ohio scheduled his execution. His execution date was scheduled again and again, delayed by appeals. Elwood Jones came within years, sometimes even just months, of being executed for a crime that, as of today, the prosecutor's office says he didn't commit. Elwood Jones is 73 years old now. He spent more than half of his adult life either on death row or waiting for the legal system to sort out whether he'd go back there. A few hours after Connie's announcement, Elwood met with his legal team, Amanda and I, and Curtis Fuller of Channel 5. He described the moment his lawyer, Jay Clark, called to tell him the charges had been dropped.
When Jay called, I got up and I went in and told my sister, I say, I'm free. She didn't understand what I meant by that. And I told her, I said, Jay just told me that she had dropped the charges against me. And she said, thank you, Jesus. I say, yeah, I tell my mother.
This will sound flowery, but it's the truth. His eyes glistened then. He pursed his lips to hold back tears. Elwood's mother, both his parents, but he was closest with his mom, died while he was in prison. He's not celebrating without reservation.
It's like I'm still walking on eggshells because I feel, even when I get up in the morning, when I come out, if I turn wrong with some habit, that I have let eat the people down. Who actually gave even Judge Cross. So that's going to be a balancing act the rest of my life. And I'm going to walk the rest of my life to try to make it that you didn't make the wrong decision.
For his lawyer, Jay Clark, who has worked pro bono on this case for years, the emotion was overwhelming. Here's how he described calling Elwood with the news.
I cannot think of anything I have done in my life. And I'm being serious when I say this. I've been married twice. I've won trials. I've lost trials. I've won appeals. I've lost appeals. I've won in the Ohio Supreme Court. Lost in the Ohio Supreme Court. Everything I've done in my entire life, graduated from high school, college, anything, has never left me with the way I feel right now. And when I got to call him and tell him that, he said, what's going on? I said, I've been waiting 30 years to tell you this. And he started to cry. And I started to cry. And I just can't even describe what that emotion feels like. It is just simply overwhelming.
Now, I'm recording this the morning after the press conference, though you're probably hearing it at least a day or two later. We worked as fast as we could, I promise. We didn't know this was coming. Neither did Jay Clark or David Hein or Emily St. Cyr or Aaron Barnhart, some of the lawyers who've worked for years on this case. But that's not to say they hadn't hoped. A week before Pillage made the announcement, Jay and David said they had finally met with the prosecutor to talk about the case. She naturally floated the idea of what's called an Alford plea. That would mean Elwood would plead guilty by acknowledging there's enough evidence to convict him, though he'd still maintain his actual innocence. Well, that would never fly in this case because, number one, Elwood is an incredibly stubborn man, and this was never about him gaining freedom as much as it was about clearing his name. And number two, the problem with the case is a lack of evidence, especially in the wake of Judge Cross's ruling and the First District's concurrence, that the late Officer Bray's testimony, among others, couldn't be reintroduced because it would violate Elwood's constitutional right to confront his accusers. In that meeting with Pillage, Hein said Pillage asked,
what is it exactly that you think should happen? They asked that to us. And fundamentally, the answer was, well, the charges need to be dismissed. And then, well, what does that look like to you? And Emily and I kind of ran through, like, look, if you want us to give you Elwood's Christmas list here, it would be this, 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 and this. But it doesn't need to be that. And we acknowledge that, like, you could just say, time has passed, we're not doing it anymore, whatever. I think she came pretty close to what we actually would say was the wish list here, because she did do all of the things that you're talking about, where she walked through the fact that, like, you can't look at this evidence and conclude that he's guilty.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
As for Rhoda Nathan's actual killer, that's an open question. Her case is now unsolved. Pillage said it would be up to the Blue Ash Police Department to decide if they want to reopen the investigation, which she acknowledged would be tricky after all these decades. The withheld documents included information about alternate suspects, including tips about people who were seen near her hotel room around the time she was killed. Rhoda's family has firmly believed in Jones's guilt. They've declined my interview requests over the years, but they've been vocal in their conviction that justice was served when Jones was sentenced to death. Friday's news will undoubtedly be devastating for them. Here was Valentine Nathan in a video produced by former prosecutor Joe Dieters after Cross overturned Jones's conviction.
The mere fact that he's still even alive after all the appeals and everything else, that I'm not ashamed to say it, that he's still breathing? Seriously? My mother is not here. And this guy is still breathing and still appealing. I'm not saying that him dying is going to be fair. No. But him living is certainly not fair.
I can't imagine what Pillage's conversation with the family was like. The Nathans had every reason to believe so fervently in Jones's guilt, and they had been told again and again by Hamilton County officials that the right guy had been convicted. Families who've undergone trauma like that want a sense of closure. They're vulnerable, too, so they're inclined to believe the people who are fighting on their behalf to solve the case. I imagine that even today, they're hearing from people no longer in power that Pillage got it wrong and that her decision was purely political. The Nathans are victims in this case, too. Not just of Rhoda's murder, but of a system that gave them certainty where the evidence didn't support it. They deserved better than that. And Rhoda deserved a real investigation that followed every lead, not one that locked onto Elwood Jones and stopped looking. That's something Pillage herself acknowledged in her press conference.
But my job is to deliver justice with integrity, not go after the first person we identify as a possible suspect. This office, under my leadership, does not cheat in order to score a win.
The implication is that's exactly what happened in 1995. If you followed my earlier reporting through the Accused podcast, you might remember that Blue Ash Police Chief Mike Allen told reporters in May of that year, quote, "We're at a point here where we're going to have to find something soon or put it on the shelf until someone comes forward," end quote. Allen got an angry letter from then Prosecutor Dieters, lambasting him for making the statement. 4 months later, in September, Elwood Jones was arrested. It's important to note that no one new had come forward, no new evidence had materialized. Pillage noted in her press conference that the withheld investigatory documents included information about alternate suspects.
There had been, we've learned of poor follow-up on evidence of multiple alternative suspects and information provided by multiple witnesses at the scene. And this information, again, pointed to multiple alternative suspects.
Those alternate suspects included hotel employees with violent criminal records, including aggravated robbery and assault. One employee wasn't scheduled to work that morning, but was spotted at the hotel in his work uniform around the time Rhoda was killed. Hotel guests reported seeing unknown men near Rhoda's room, including one woman who told police she saw a man running carelessly through the parking lot and sprinting into the woods around 7:30 a.m., right in the critical time window. She also noticed a hotel door had been propped open with a cup. When she later learned about the murder, she contacted police, but her statement was among those withheld from the defense. And in 1995, police received a tip that another man had confessed to the murder and framed a black man for it, but when the tipster called the Blue Ash Police Department, she was told, "The case is closed. We found the guy who did it." That tip was apparently dismissed without investigation. Once police zeroed in on Elwood, none of these leads were ever fully pursued. In fact, police created detailed spreadsheets comparing Elwood's work schedule to hotel thefts, but they never did the same analysis for any other employee, even though multiple workers had criminal records. For those who followed our original reporting on the case 3 years ago, this will all sound familiar. These investigative failures, the alternate suspects, the withheld evidence, the tunnel vision, were documented extensively in our Accused podcast series while prosecutors were still insisting Elwood belonged on death row. When Elwood sat down with us and WLWT reporter Curtis Fuller, he initially tried to avoid sitting at the microphone. He tried to sit in the back seat off to the side. His lawyers had to coax him to take center stage. It seemed fitting for a man who just spent more than three decades insisting he didn't belong in the spotlight prosecutors had put him in. At times during the conversation, when asked what kept him going all these years, he said simply his faith. But he's also a gruff man, and watching him process this moment, vindication mixed with something that looked like disbelief, was jarring. He seemed to be grappling with the development on a lot of levels.
Still feel sorry for the family, but I'm not that person. I'm a victim too, you know. And I'm sorry that they didn't receive the justice that they want. And I don't think that they may never receive it the way things turned out.
Jay Clark was even more direct about what the state did to the Nathan family.
is that for 30 years that family's been lied to. And they've been told things that are simply, in some cases, scientifically impossible. They could not be the way the state has represented them. So they've been kept in the dark and lied to for 30 years. So again, it's more misconduct by that office.
This case is part of a broader problem with wrongful convictions and death penalty cases. According to the Death Penalty Information Center, since 1973, more than 190 people have been exonerated from death row in the United States. That's 190 people who came within months, weeks, sometimes days of being executed for crimes they didn't commit. Elwood Jones is now one of them. Though because charges were dismissed before he was officially exonerated through the courts, the terminology gets complicated. But make no mistake, a prosecutor just stood up and said the state of Ohio nearly executed an innocent man. That should make all of us uncomfortable, regardless of how we feel about the death penalty in general. Now, Connie Pillage was careful in her announcement not to point fingers at anyone specific who came before her, but she did say a few times,
"I'm a different person than who was here before me."
She took office as Hamilton County prosecutor in January 2025, inheriting this case from her predecessors, Joe Dieters and Melissa Powers, both of whom had insisted that Jones was guilty and should be returned to death row. Dieters had been the longest-serving prosecutor in Hamilton County's history when he left in early 2023. He's now an Ohio Supreme Court justice. But he was still here when Cross overturned the conviction. He slammed the judge as an overzealous activist. He also said,
"Elwood Jones is a murderous bastard."
Pillage ran as a reform candidate, promising to take a fresh look at cases where there were questions about the original conviction. She said her decision in this case wasn't made lightly. She hand-delivered her motion to dismiss to Judge Cross, who signed it, quote, "without hesitation," end quote.
I got very emotional about it because I realized what we were doing was big and a big, in my mind, a big step for justice.
And by the way, that dismissal was with prejudice, which means Elwood Jones can't be charged in this case again. Also Friday, Pillage announced plans to follow through on her reform promise in another way. She vowed to begin a conviction integrity unit that follows national guidelines. She said more cases like Elwood's would get reexamined. The wheels of justice move slowly, sometimes glacially slowly. But in Elwood Jones's case, they finally seem to have moved in the right direction. It only took 3 decades. What If They're Wrong After the Accusation is a production of Just Us Media and Grab Bag Collab. It's reported and hosted by me, Amber Hunt. Amanda Rossman was on the scene Friday as well, and she serves as producer. If you like what you hear and want to support this kind of investigative journalism, please rate and review us and tell your friends where to find us. And please also consider supporting our subscription-based network at grabbagcollab.com, where you get access to this show early and ad-free, plus several others.